George, you have some experience of the English upper classes, have you not?
Yes, sir. I was in the service of the late Lord Frampton for several years. Mm. Shall I put out the dark grey suit, sir?
There is a grease spot on the waistcoat, a morceau of filet de sole à la Jeannette I did there when I was lunching at the Ritz last Tuesday.
There is no spot there now, sir. I have removed it.
Très bien, George. I should have known you would have seen to it. Supposing, my good George, that you had been born in the same social sphere as your late master, Lord Edward Frampton. No. Suppose yourself a penniless aristocrat who had married an extremely wealthy wife, and you discovered that your wife proposed, for excellent reasons, to divorce you. What would you do about it?
I should endeavour, sir, to make her change her mind.
By peaceable or by forcible methods?
You must excuse me, Monsieur Poirot, but a gentleman would never resort to forcible means in a situation like that.
But a costermonger would use force. That is very interesting, Georges.
For Monsieur Poirot.
Hmm?
I will see that he gets it. A note, sir, from Inspector Coe.
Well, what does it say?
We are about to interview the Comte de la Roche. The juge d'instruction begs that you will be present.
Then quickly, Georges. Give me my unspotted suit.
Well, gentlemen, I am here. May I ask why you wish to see me?
Pray be seated, Monsieur le Comte. It is the affair of Madame Catherine that we are investigating.
The affair of Madame Catherine? What do you mean by that?
You are acquainted with the lady, I believe, Monsieur le Comte.
Certainly, I'm acquainted with her. Is that a criminal offence?
Perhaps you do not know, Monsieur le Comte, that Madame Catherine has been murdered.
Murdered? No, I did not know. Very terrible.
And Madame Catherine was strangled on the train bleu and her jewels were stolen.
In Madame's handbag we found a letter to her from you. She had, it seems, arranged to meet you.
Why should I lie to you? We are all men of the world.
You were to meet her in Paris and travel down with her, I believe.
That was the original arrangement, but by Madame's wish it was changed. I was to meet her at Hyères.
You did not meet her on the train bleu at the Gare de Lyon on the evening of the 14th.
On the contrary, I arrived at Nice on the morning of that day, so what you suggest is impossible.
Oh, quite so. Perhaps you could give us an account of your movements during the evening and night of the 14th.
I dined in Monte Carlo at the Café de Paris. Afterwards, I went along to the Sporting. I won a few thousand francs. I returned home at perhaps 1 o'clock.
Your servant admitted you on your return to the villa?
I let myself in with my own latchkey.
I see, thank you. bring in Mademoiselle Maison.
Yes, Monsieur le Juge. This way, Mademoiselle.
Yes, sir.
Now, will you be so good, Mademoiselle, as to look at this gentleman? To the best of your remembrance, was it he who entered your mistress' compartment on the blue train in Paris?
Well, I couldn't see, sir. No, I'm not sure, seeing as I only saw his back. It's hard to see. I rather think it may have been the gentleman.
But you can't say for certain.
No, sir. I'm afraid I can't.
Very well, mademoiselle, that will do.
Thank you, sir.
One moment. There is a question I would like to put to mademoiselle, if I may. Oh,
certainly, Monsieur Poirot, if you must.
What happened to the train tickets?
Well, the mistress had her own Pullman ticket, sir. I gave the others to the conductor.
Oh, thank you, mademoiselle.
Well, gentlemen, am I to be detained further?
Oh, assuredly not, Monsieur le Comte. Naturally, in view of Madame's letter, we were bound to question you.
I quite understand. Good day, monsieur.
Good day.
Good. This is much better to make him feel that he is not suspected. But you will keep an eye on him.
Two of my men will shadow him night and day.
I asked Monsieur Kettering to come here this morning. There are one or two suspicious circumstances.
Such as?
Well, this lady with whom he is said to be traveling.
Mirel?
Yes. She is staying at one hotel and he at another. That strikes me as rather odd.
It looks as though they were being careful.
Exactly. And what should they have to be so careful about?
We might, I think, ask Monsieur Kettering a few questions.
Very well. Yes, ask Monsieur Kettering if you'll be good enough to spare us a few minutes.
Oui, monsieur.
You may be right. Perhaps an excess of caution is suspicious.
Precisely.
Monsieur Kettering.
Good morning, monsieur.
Good morning, gentlemen. Why have you sent for me? Has anything fresh turned up?
You are quite sure that you neither saw nor spoke with your wife on the train?
I've answered that already. I did not.
You had no doubt your reasons?
I did not know she was on the train.
Well, Madame Kettering, I understand, did not leave a will.
I don't think she ever made one. Why do you ask?
You inherit a very pretty little fortune.
Just what do you mean by that? And who the hell are you, anyway?
My name is Hercule Poirot, and I am probably the greatest detective in the world. Now, you are quite sure that you did not see or speak to your wife on the train bleu.
What are you getting at? Are you trying to insinuate that I killed her? You'll have to do better than that. If I killed her, I should have had no need to steal her jewels, should I?
Ah, that is true. I did not think of
that. If ever there was a clear case of murder and robbery, this is it. Poor Ruth. It was those damned rubies did for her.
One more question, Monsieur Kettering. Will you give me the date when you last saw your wife?
It must have been, well, over 3 weeks ago. Anything further?
No, Monsieur Kettering. We need not trouble you any further. I wish you good morning.
Thank you. Oh, and the next time you have nothing to tell me, don't hesitate to send for me.
Tell me, Monsieur Carriage, when did you speak of the rubies to Monsieur Kettering?
I have not spoken of them. It was only yesterday afternoon that we heard of them from Monsieur Van Olden.
Then how did he know about them? Madame could not have told him, for he's not seen her for 3 weeks. And there's not been any hint of reference to them in the newspapers. And yet our gentleman knows all about them. I wonder now, yes, I wonder.
Oui, monsieur?
Green lady.
At once, monsieur.
Oh, Derek! I thought I might find you here. Aren't you pleased to see me? Give me some kind of welcome at least.
This is an unexpected pleasure. When did you leave London?
A day or two ago.
And your theatrical engagements?
Oh, they are no longer of any concern to me.
Really?
You are not very amiable, Derek.
Do you expect me to be?
You think perhaps it is not prudent so soon.
You're lunching here.
Yes, my darling. I am lunching with you.
No, I'm exceedingly sorry. I have a very important engagement.
Monsieur?
Thank you.
And for madame?
The same.
Thank you, madame.
Oh, you cannot deceive me, my darling. I know what you have done for me. Have no fear. I am discreet.
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, you are right. We will not speak of the matter again. But our troubles are ended. Our life together will be wonderful. Wonderful.
2 million makes a difference, does it? Yes. Yes, of course it does. I ought to have known that. You'll help me to spend that 2 million, won't you, Mirel? You know how. No woman better.
Be quiet. What is the matter with you, Derek? See, people are staring at us.
I will tell you what is the matter. I have finished with you, Mirel.
Oh, you are such a child, Derek. You are angry because I am being realistic. But I know you, Derek. You cannot live without me. I know it. Oh, I loved you before. I will love you 100 times more now. I will make life wonderful for you. There is no one like Mirel. And now, Derek, will you give me lunch?
No, Mirel. No, I'm sorry, but I told you, I have an engagement.
You are lunching with someone else?
Yes, with that lady over there.
With that little English miss? I don't believe it.
Goodbye, Mirel. Miss Gray, will you... will you have lunch with me? I had to leave you so rapidly at Lady Tamplin's.
Thank you. I should like to very much.
Monsieur le Comte.
Yes, Hippolyte, what is it?
There is a lady to see you.
A lady?
She is, I think, a lady not known to monsieur.
And where is this lady?
In the salon, monsieur le Comte.
I will see her.
Yes, monsieur le Comte.
Just a moment, Hippolyte.
Yes, monsieur?
There is something I must say to you. As you know, I arrived here last Tuesday morning. If the police or any other inquirer should question you, do not forget that fact. I arrived on Tuesday, the 14th, not Wednesday, the 15th, you understand?
Perfectly, Monsieur le Comte.
That is well, then. I'll go see this mysterious visitor.
Monsieur le Comte de la Roche.
At your service, mademoiselle.
My name is Mirel. You may have heard of me.
Who has not? The whole world is enchanted by your dancing.
Oh, you must forgive this unceremonious intrusion.
But please be seated, mademoiselle, I beg you.
We have mutual friends in Paris. I have heard of you from them. But I come to see you today for another reason. I have heard of you since I came to Nice. In a different way, you understand.
Ah.
I will be brutal. Nevertheless, believe that I have your welfare at heart. It is the police. They believe you killed Madame Kettering.
Well,
but they are wrong.
Certainly they are wrong.
Oh, you say that, but you do not know the truth. I do.
You know who killed Madame Kettering?
It was her husband. He killed her.
But how do you know of this, mademoiselle?
He boasted of it to me beforehand. He was ruined, bankrupt, dishonored. Only the death of his wife could save him. He told me so. He traveled on the same train. She was not to know.
But surely, mademoiselle, in that case, he would not steal the jewels.
Oh, the rubies! Who could resist them?
What do you want me to do, mademoiselle?
Surely it is simple. You will go to the police. You will say to them that Monsieur Kettering committed the crime.
And if they do not believe me, if they ask for proof?
Send them to me, Monsieur le Comte. I will give them the proof they want.
Well, Catherine, how did your lunch with Derek go?
It went very well.
Do you like him?
I don't know.
He is very attractive.
Yes, he is.
He likes you, Catherine.
He gave me a good lunch.
Miss Gray is wanted on the telephone.
Oh.
Monsieur Poirot wishes to speak with her.
It doesn't look as if you could ever hope to get away from the blue train for long. Go on, Catherine. Go and dally with your detective.
Good afternoon, Monsieur Poirot.
Ah, mademoiselle. Monsieur Van Alden, the father of Madame Kettering, wishes very much to speak with you. Either at the Villa Marguerite or at his hotel, whichever you prefer.
I don't think he really ought to come out here. I think it would be better if I came to Nice.
Excellent, mademoiselle. I will call for you myself in an auto. You shall be there in about 3/4 of an hour.
So our little detective story unfolds. But would you like to hear the developments of the case?
Of course.
Well, at the moment, the police are keeping a close watch on the Comte de la Roche.
The man Mrs. Kettering told me about on the train.
The same, yeah.
And you think he is the murderer?
Well, that is the theory.
But do you believe that?
I did not say so. But tell me, have you met Derek Kettering?
I met him at Lady Tamplin's. I lunched with him yesterday.
Ah, doubtless you observed him on the blue train.
Yes, I noticed him.
In the restaurant car?
No, I didn't notice him at meals at all. I only saw him once. going into his wife's compartment.
Ah, yes, it is a strange business. You said that you were awake, mademoiselle, when the train reached Lyon, and that you looked out of the window. You saw no tall, dark man such as the Pont de la Roche leave the train.
I don't think I saw anyone at all. Oh, yes, there was a youngish lad in a cap and overcoat who got out. But I don't think he was leaving the train.
No, but it is like this, you see. The Pont de la Roche has an alibi. Well, an alibi, it is a very pestilential thing, and always open to the gravest suspicion. But we are at the hotel, and I'm afraid you will have to repeat your story all over again for the benefit of Monsieur Van Helsing.
Miss Gray, I'd like to tell you that I'm very grateful to you. I think you did something to ease my poor Ruth's mind in the last hours of her life. Now, I want to ask you something. You have heard about the scoundrel that my poor girl had got herself mixed up with.
The Comte de la Roche. Monsieur, yes. Poirot has told me about him.
In your judgment, do you think that she might have changed her mind after her conversation with you?
I can't honestly tell you. She had certainly come to some decision and seemed more cheerful in consequence of it.
Oh. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Miss Gray.
Knighton, Poirot. Will you come in, please?
Certainly.
Of course.
Miss Gray, I don't think you know my secretary, Major Knighton.
How do you do?
Miss Gray?
Well, Poirot, Miss Gray has told me all she knows, but the vital point remains a mystery.
No, what is it, this vital point?
Well, if only we knew what decision Ruth came to. She might have meant to leave the train and cable me. Mm-hmm. She may have meant to go on to Hier and have an assignation with the Comte there. We're completely in the dark. All we have is the maid's word that Ruth was startled and dismayed by his appearance at the train in Paris.
If it was him.
Yes, yes, indeed. Mm. Miss Gray, will you stay to lunch?
Oh, forgive me, Mr. Van Alden, but Lady Tamplin's giving one of her lunch parties. I promised I'd be there.
Then I'll get Knighton to drive you back. That won't put you out, will it, Knighton?
I'd be delighted.
You're becoming a serious breaker of hearts, Catherine.
What?
Mr. Knighton has been ringing you up again.
Major Knighton? Whatever did he want?
Ever since he ran you back the other day, he's never been off the phone. You must have made quite an impression. The funny thing is that I remember him quite well. He was in the hospital that Mother ran out here during the war. I was only a kid of about 8 at the time.
Was he badly wounded?
Shot in the leg, if I remember rightly. Rather a nasty business. I think the doctors must have messed it up a bit. The surgeon said he wouldn't limp or anything, but when he dropped you off here the other day, he was distinctly dot and go one.
Are you telling Catherine all about Major Knighton, Lennox? Such a charming boy. Just at first, I didn't remember him. We had so many, but now it all comes back.
He was a bit too unimportant to be remembered before. Now that he's secretary to an American millionaire, Mother suddenly recovered her memory.
Darling.
What was Major Knighton ringing up about anyway?
He asked if you would go to the tennis this afternoon.
Naturally, we accepted for you.
He was very particular to say it was Mr. Van Alden's invitation. He said it so often that I began to smell a rat. He's picking you up in the car at 3:30.
I'm very glad that you could come. I think it might be quite an exciting afternoon. Monsieur Poirot is going to be there also.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought of him as a tennis fan.
He is a very remarkable person who has done some very remarkable things. I remember I was staying in a house in Yorkshire, and Lady Clanraven's jewels were stolen. It seemed at first to be a simple robbery, but it completely baffled the local police. I wanted Lady Clanraven to call in Hercule Poirot, but they pinned their faith on Scotland Yard.
And what happened?
The jewels were never recovered.
You really do believe in him?
I do indeed. The Comte de la Roche is a pretty wily customer. He's wriggled out of most things, but I think he has met his match in Hercule Poirot.
So you think the Comte did it?
Of course. don't you?
But he has an alibi.
Oh. Miss Gray, you told me that you read detective stories. You must know that anyone who has a perfect alibi is always open to grave suspicion.
Do you think real life is like that?
Why? Fiction is founded on fact.
But it is rather superior to it.
Perhaps. Anyway, if I was a criminal, I should not like to have Hercule Poirot on my back.
Oh, no more should I.
Bonjour, mademoiselle. Bonjour, mesdames.
Ah, Monsieur Poirot, you look wonderful.
Oh. Bonjour, Monsieur Poirot. Where is Mr. Van Orden?
He will meet us at our seats. To tell you the truth, my friend, he is not too well pleased with me. He thinks I should fly myself in pursuit of criminals through all the byways of Nice.
I should have thought myself that it wouldn't have been a bad plan.
Ah, there you were wrong. I shall achieve quite as much by sitting here. At the tennis, one meets everyone. For example, here comes Monsieur Kettering.
Good afternoon. Miss Gray.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kettering. Monsieur Poirot was just saying that you meet everyone at the tennis.
What's he now?
Uh-oh, there's Mr. Van Orden. I'd better see what he wants.
I approve of that young man. And you, mademoiselle?
I like him very much.
And you, Mr. Kettering?
Yes. He's a very good fellow.
Oh.
He's a great admirer of yours, Monsieur Poirot.
Huh?
He was saying that if he were a criminal, he would hate to have you on his track.
reminds me, mademoiselle, when you were talking to that poor lady on the train, I think you must have dropped a cigarette case.
I don't think so.
Not this one? You see, it has a little K on it in gold.
No, it's not mine.
Oh, a thousand apologies. We thought at first that it must have belonged to Madame Kettering, but she had another cigarette case in her bag. You do not know, I suppose, whether this was your wife's case or not, Monsieur Kettering.
I don't know. I suppose so.
Is it not yours by any chance?
Certainly not.
Well, I thought you might perhaps have dropped it when you were in your wife's compartment.
I never was there. I've told you that a thousand times.
Oh, a thousand pardons. It was Mademoiselle here who mentioned having seen you going in.
Oh, well, you made a mistake, Miss Gray. From what the police have told me, I gather that my own compartment was only a door or two away from my wife's, though I never suspected the fact at the time. You must have seen me going into my own compartment.
Ah, here comes Monsieur Van Orden.
I can't think of anything I'd like less at the moment than an encounter with my father-in-law. Forgive me if I leave you.
Good afternoon, Miss Gray. I'm glad you were able to accept my invitation.
Thank you for inviting me, Mr. Van Orden.
Do sit down. Knighton, there is a seat right next to Miss Gray there.
Oh, thanks.
You seem fond of watching tennis, Monsieur Poirot.
It is a pleasure to me, yes.
Where I come from, business comes before pleasure.
Everyone has his own methods. I have always found it a pleasing idea to combine business and pleasure. Observe that tall old man opposite us, the one with the yellow face and the venerable beard.
Well, what about him?
Well, that is Monsieur Papopoulos. He's a dealer in antiques of a worldwide reputation and widely suspected by the police of being a receiver of stolen goods, especially jewels.
Oh, wow.
Now, I ask myself, why is Monsieur Papopoulos suddenly come to Nice?
Well, I guess I must apologize to you, Poirot.
Oh, now, I have news for you. As you know, the Comte de la Roche has been under police surveillance ever since his interview with the juge d'instruction. Well, the day after that, during his absence, his villa was searched by the police.
They didn't find anything out, then.
Your acumen is not at fault, Monsieur Van Orden. They found nothing of an incriminating nature, but they were also keeping an eye on his car. He was followed on that day to Monte Carlo. From there he went by road to Monta. But his car is a very powerful one. It outdistanced his pursuers, and for a quarter of an hour they completely lost sight of him.
And during that time, you think he concealed something by the roadside?
By the roadside, no, but I made a little suggestion to Monsieur Carriage. In each bureau, the post in the neighborhood, it has been seen to her there is someone who knows the Comte de la Roche by sight. Because, you see, the best way of hiding a thing is by sending it away by post.
Well,
voila. A small package mailed by the Comte in that vital quarter of an hour.
to what address?
Oh, unfortunately, he told us nothing. It was addressed to one of those little newspaper shops in Paris where letters and parcels are kept until called for.
But what's in the package, Poirot?
A cardboard box. Now is a good moment. All eyes are on the Venice. Look, monsieur.
My God. The rubies.
More coffee, Father?
Thank you, dear. Excuse me, monsieur. There is a gentleman to see you, Monsieur Papopoulos.
At this hour?
He said it was very important. Here is his card.
Oh, read it for me, will you, my dear?
Monsieur Hercule Poirot.
Poirot? Oh, yes, I'll see him.
Yes, Monsieur Papopoulos.
I saw him yesterday at the tennis. I don't like this.
My dear Monsieur Papopoulos.
Oh, my dear Monsieur Poirot.
Sit down and have a cup of coffee, Monsieur Poirot.
Thank you.
You will excuse me going on with my breakfast. Your call is a little early.
Oh, it is scandalous, but you see, I'm pressed.
You are working on a case, then?
A very serious one, the death of Madame Kettering.
Oh, that was the lady who died on the blue train, was it not? I saw a mention of it in the newspapers. And in what way can I assist you, Monsieur Poirot?
By giving me your opinion on the contents of this box. Superb, are they not? Take the rubies. Have a close look at them. How much would you say they were worth?
Is it really necessary to tell you?
You are shrewd, Monsieur Poirot. No, it is not.
As an imitation, they are quite excellent. Would it be indiscreet to ask where you came across
them? Oh, not at all. I have no objection to telling an old friend like yourself. They were in the possession of the Comte de la Roche.
Were they?
Monsieur Papopoulos, I'm going to lay my cards on the table. The originals of these jewels were stolen from Madame Kettering on the blue train. Now, I will say to you first this. I am not concerned with the recovery of these jewels. I am working not for the police, but for the father of Madame Kettering. I want to lay hands upon her killer. I am interested in the jewels only insofar as they may lead me to the man, you understand?
I think so. Go on.
Well, it seems to me probable, monsieur, that the jewels will change hands in Nice, may already have done so.
I see.
I say to myself this, if these jewels have changed hands in Nice, Monsieur Papopoulos would have heard of it. He has knowledge of all that passes in the jewel world.
Would you like a croissant, monsieur?
Thank you. Now, the police, you understand, don't enter into the matter. It is a personal affair.
I have heard rumors.
Oh, such as?
Is there any reason why I should pass them on to you?
Yes, yes, I think there is. You may remember, Monsieur Papopoulos, that 17 years ago there was a certain article in your hands left by a very prominent person which unaccountably disappeared. And you said that if I restore to you that article, I shall earn your undying gratitude. I did restore it to you.
It was the most unpleasant moment of my career.
You will aid me then.
As regards the jewels, monsieur, I can do nothing. I know nothing. I have heard nothing. But I can perhaps do you a good turn. And that is, if you are interested in racing.
Oh, under certain circumstances, I might be.
There is a horse running at Longchamp that would, I think, repay attention. Take a look at the newspaper. Here, you see?
The Marquis?
I think, but I am not sure, that it is an English horse. Asia?
I think so, too.
You really are the goods, Monsieur Poirot. Once and for all, you really are the goods.
Oh, it is nothing. Order, method, being prepared for eventualities beforehand, that is all there is to it.
Have they arrested the Comte de la Roche?
No.
Why not?
The Comte's alibi is still unshaken.
But that's nonsense.
Well, yes, I rather think it is nonsense, but unfortunately we have to prove it so. However, at present there is something else which concerns me. Is the maid,
Mademoiselle Mason still here?
Yes, she's here. You want to see her?
Yeah, if you please, I would be most grateful.
Will you send in Miss Mason, please?
Just a few little questions I have to ask her.
You wish to see me, sir?
Ah, mademoiselle. Be seated, will you?
Oh, thank you, sir.
Now, always I return to the question of the man on the trail. You have been shown the Comte de la Roche, but you are not sure that he is the man.
I never saw the gentleman's face. That is what makes it so difficult.
Yes, precisely. Now, listen, mademoiselle. How do you know it was not your master, Monsieur Kettering?
The master, sir? I don't think it could have been.
But you are not sure.
Really? I never thought of it, sir.
But you've heard that your master was on the train. What more natural than it should be him?
Well, yes, it might have been the master. I wouldn't like to say either way, I'm sure.
Thank you very much, mademoiselle. I shall not require you any further.
Oh, thank you, sir.
There is just one thing more. Is this your mistress' cigarette case?
No, sir, it is. At least.
Yes?
Well, I think, sir. I can't be sure, but I think it is a case the mistress once bought for the master.
Ah.
But whether she gave it to him or not, I can't say, of course.
Precisely. Well, that is all, I think. I wish you good day.
Oh, good day, sir. Thank you.
But why should you still suspect Kettering? Everything points the other way. Why, the Comte actually had the jewels in his possession.
No.
But you showed them to me.
No.
You mean to say you didn't show them to me?
No.
Yesterday at the tennis.
No.
Are you crazy, Monsieur Poirot, or am I?
No, neither of us is crazy. You ask me a question, I answer it. You say, have I not shown you the jewels yesterday? I reply, no. What I showed you, Monsieur Van Alden, was a first-class imitation.
What?
Yeah, hardly to be distinguished except by an expert from the real ones.
Are you serious?
Yes, it alters the position, does it not?
Imitation. All along, monsieur, you have had this idea. You never believed that the Comte de la Roche was the murderer?
No, I have had doubts. Robbery with violence and murder. No, it doesn't harmonize with the personality of the court.
But you believe he meant to steal the rubies?
Oh, certainly there is no doubt about that. The court knew the rubies and made his plans accordingly. He made up a romantic story of a book he was writing so as to induce your daughter to bring them with her. He provided himself with an exact duplicate. It is clear, is it not, that substitution is what he was after?
Yes, but what actually happened?
Well, it's quite simple. Someone stepped in ahead of the Comte.
How long have you suspected my son-in-law, Monsieur Poirot?
Ah, from the very first. He had the motive and the opportunity.
You believe he murdered him?
No, I do not say that, but it is a possibility, a very strong possibility.
Look, just find Ruth's murderer for me, Poirot. That's all I ask.
Leave it in the hands of Hercule Poirot. Have no fears. I will discover the truth. All of which is all very well, but there is just one little obstacle. How am I to do it?
Monsieur Poirot!
Ah.
You have the weary air of a man who has just emerged from a conference with my father-in-law.
And you have the air of a man who has just parted from an attractive young lady. Was that Miss Gray I saw?
Yeah, she is rather a dear, isn't she?
Ah, you will pardon an old man, monsieur, if he says to you something you may consider impertinent. There's one of your English proverbs that I would quote to you. It says that it is well to be off with the old love before being on with the new.
What the devil do you mean by that?
That is what I mean. The lady in that car there.
Mirel. No, Monsieur Poirot, you're wrong. I've broken with her utterly, and she knows it.
You have broken with her, yes, but has she broken with you?
Mireille won't break with £2 million, if she can help it.
Oh, you are cynical, Monsieur Catherine.
Am I? Well, I've lived in the world long enough, Monsieur Poirot, to know that all women are pretty much alike. All save one, that is. I know what you're going to say. The kind of life I've led, the fact that I'm not worthy of her, to say that I have no earthly chance of marrying Catherine.
No, I would not say that. Your reputation is bad, yes, but with women that will not deter. If you were a man of excellent character, of strict morality, who had done the thing that he should not do, then I should have had grave doubts of your success. Moral worth, you understand, is not romantic. It is, however, appreciated by widows. But it is time that I return to my hotel. I will leave you with another English saying, Monsieur Kettering. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Think about it. The personality of a criminal, Georges, is an interesting matter.
Sir?
Many murderers are men of great personal charm.
I have always heard, sir, that Dr. Crippin was a pleasant-spoken gentleman. And yet he cut up his wife like so much mincemeat.
Your instances are always apt, George. Hello, it is Poirot who speaks.
This is Knighton, Monsieur Poirot. Mr. Van Alden would like to speak to you.
Is that you, Poirot?
Yes.
I just wanted to tell you that Mason came to meet us now of her own accord. She's been thinking it over, and she says that she's almost certain that the man in Paris was Derek Kettering. There was something familiar about him at the time, she says, but she couldn't place it. She seems pretty certain now.
Thank you, Monsieur Van Alden. That advances us. Thank you very much. Goodbye, Monsieur.
Are you lunching here, Monsieur Poirot, or are you going out?
Neither. I shall go to bed and take a tisane. The expected has happened, and when the expected happens, it always causes me emotion.
Monsieur Kettering! A gentleman is waiting to see you, monsieur.
Who is he?
He did not give his name, but he said his business with you was important, and that he would wait.
Where is he?
In the little salon, monsieur. He preferred it to the lounge, he said, as being more private.
The Comte de la Roche, is it not?
Ah, Monsieur Kettering, allow me to offer you my condolences on your recent bereavement.
Your condolences are misplaced. Get on with what you've come here to say.
Then I will come immediately to the point, if that is what you wish.
Yes, that is what I wish, or I shall boot you down the Promenade des Anglais.
If you desire it, monsieur, I will send my friends to you.
All that I desire is that you should say what you've come here to say, and then get out.
Very well. You have come into a lot of money.
What the devil has that got to do with you?
I am suspected of murdering your wife. So not only am I unjustly suspected of a crime that I did not commit, but I am also in serious need of money. And my conscience might impel me to go to the police with certain information.
What do you mean by that?
Certain information has come into my hands that could result in your being arrested and tried for murder. It would not be exactly agreeable to you.
Then, I shall call your bluff, de la Roche.
It is no bluff. My information was obtained from a certain lady. It is she who holds the irrefutable proof that you committed the murder.
Mireille, I have just had the most extraordinary meeting with that scoundrel who calls himself the Comte de la Roche. Was it your doing?
I haven't the least idea what you are talking about.
He says that you have irrefutable proof that I committed the murder.
Oh, it is too absurd. I will tell you exactly what happened. The other day, the day when you refused to have lunch with me, I was mad with rage. I wanted to be revenged on you. And so I went to the Comte de la Roche and told him to go to the police and say so and so. But have no fear, Derek. I did not completely lose my head. The proof rests with me alone. The police can do nothing without my word. But now you have come back to me, and we can forget all about it. You have come back to me, have you not?
I shall never come back to you.
So I was right. There is another woman. The one with whom you lunched the other day.
You might as well know the truth, Mirel. I intend to ask her to marry me.
In that prim little English mouse? Do you think I will put up with that? The police want evidence, and I have it.
What do you mean?
I saw you coming out of the compartment of Madame, your wife, just before the train got into Lyon that night. And I know more than that. I know that when you came out of her compartment, she was dead.
And so, Mademoiselle Grey, we are the good friends who have no secrets from each other.
Of course we are friends.
Tell me what you think of Major Knighton.
I like him very much. He's quite delightful.
What
is the matter?
Oh, you reply so heartily. If you had said, oh, quite nice, I would have been better pleased. And yet, who knows, perhaps your heartiness is a way of concealing what you really feel.
I don't
see. Let me ask you another question. Do you like Derek Kettering?
Oh, I hardly know him.
Now, that is not an answer.
I think it is.
Perhaps you are right, mademoiselle. I've seen much of the world, and I know that there are two things which are true. A good man may be ruined by his love for a bad woman, but the other way holds good also. A bad man may equally be ruined by his love for a good woman.
You are trying to warn me. Against whom?
I cannot look into your heart, mademoiselle. I do not think you would let me if I could. I would just say this. This man of whom I speak, the emotion he feels is genuine enough, but all the same...
Yes?
You could perhaps love a thief, mademoiselle, but not a murderer. Now here comes Monsieur Kettering. Think over what I have said.
May I sit down?
Of course.
I want to talk to you, and who knows when I may have another opportunity. There's an idea going about that I murdered my wife.
But...
No, please don't interrupt. I don't deny that I married her for her money. I don't deny that I treated her abominably, but I swear to you, solemnly, that I did not kill my wife. I know I lied the other day. It was my wife's compartment I went into.
I knew I wasn't mistaken.
You see, I was more or less spying on her. Mirel had told me that she was meeting de la Roche in Paris and taking the rubies with her. Well, as far as I had seen, this was not so. I felt ashamed, and I thought suddenly that it would be a good thing to have it out with her, once and for all. So I pushed open the door and went in.
Yes.
Ruth was lying on the bunk, asleep. Her face was turned away from me. She looked so peaceful lying there. What was the point of waking her to say what I'd said 100 times before? So I left the compartment as quickly as I could.
But why lie about it to the police?
Because I'm not a complete fool. I know that they suspect me. If I once admitted that I'd been in her compartment just before she'd been murdered, that would be the finish.
Ah, I see.
You know, from the moment I saw you, I knew you were the only woman for me. I was afraid of you. I thought you might bring me bad luck, oh, Catherine. Yeah. You know that I care for you. Do you care for me?
I don't know. Derek?
Yes?
Hello there!
Oh, damn. Here comes that idiot, Knighton. Well, I won't keep you.
Oh.
I'm sure you have a lot to talk about.
Oh, Miss Grey. How nice to see you. Do you mind if I sit beside you?
Please do, Major Knighton.
Oh, thank you. I've I've been longing for a chance to talk to you alone. Mr. Van Alden may leave any day now, and I may not have the chance again. Look, I know you can't care for me so soon. That's impossible. I dare say it's presumption on my part. But I have private means. Not very much, but...
But Major Knighton, I can't...
No, please. Don't answer now. I know what your answer would be. But in case I had to go away suddenly, I just wanted you to know that I care. Look, forgive me. Goodbye, Catherine.
There's something I've got to tell you. Something you must know. You must listen. Ruth Kettering. What is it? What is it you have to say to me?
Catherine! Is there something the matter?
Oh.
Catherine, are you all right?
Oh, yes, I'm quite all right. Oh, I suddenly felt a little dizzy. But there's nothing wrong.
Mr. Powell?
Hmm? Ah, Major Knighton.
I wonder if you could spare me a few minutes of your time.
I am at your disposal.
The matter is rather delicate. Hmm? I have no desire to be disloyal to my employer.
You may have perfect confidence in my discretion, Major Knighton.
Very well, I will tell you. You have doubtless heard of Mireille, the dancer.
The Jeremy Derek Kettering.
Just so. You can imagine that Mr. Van Alden is not exactly well disposed toward her. This morning she came to the hotel and sent up a card saying that it was vital she should see Mr. Van Alden at once.
You interest me.
Mr. Van Alden told me in no uncertain terms to send her away.
But that was most foolish of me.
So I took it upon myself to have a word with the lady privately.
Did you?
I told her that Mr. Van Alden was too busy to see her, but that she might make any communication she wished to me. Mm. That, however, she could not bring herself to do. But I am convinced that she knows something.
Oh, this is serious. You know where she's staying?
At the Westminster.
Good. We will go there immediately.
Yes, Miss. I will speak. I have kept silent too long. I have held my hand, and for what? To be insulted by that monster. He thinks he can throw me off like an old glove, but he is mistaken. I will smash him like that.
Bravo, magnifique, what temperament.
I am an artist.
You are indeed.
I told Derek to beware, but he would not listen. Is it true that he intends to marry that English girl?
He certainly seems to be seeing a lot of her.
He murdered his wife. That is what I have to tell you. He told me beforehand that he meant to do it.
The police will need proof of that, mademoiselle.
I saw him come out of her compartment that night on the train.
When?
Just before the train reached Lyon.
This is a serious matter. We must waste no time. Are you prepared to swear that before the juge d'instruction?
Yes, monsieur. I am.
This is an extraordinary story, mademoiselle. You wish us to believe that Monsieur Kettering actually boasted of the crime to you beforehand?
He was desperate for money. He said her death would have to appear to be an accident.
You are aware that you are making yourself an accessory before the fact.
Oh, but I did not take him seriously. Not for a moment. I know men, monsieur. They say many wild things.
Yes. When did it first occur to you that Monsieur Kettering had murdered his wife?
When I saw him coming out of her compartment. There was a look on his face, haunted and horrible. I shall never forget it. Afterwards, when I found that Madame Kettering was dead when the train left Lyon, then I knew for certain.
But you did not go to the police?
You would not expect me to betray my lover.
And now?
Now he has betrayed me.
Quite so. If you would be so good as to cast your eye over this statement, mademoiselle...
I will sign it. You require me no longer, monsieur?
At present, no.
And Derek will be arrested?
At once.
Ah, good.
There is one little matter, mademoiselle.
Yes?
What makes you think that Madame Kettering was dead when the train left Lyon?
But of course she was dead.
Was she?
I have been told so. Everybody says
so. I was not aware it had been mentioned outside this office.
Somebody told me. I don't remember who.
And the jewels, can you tell me anything about those?
The jewels? What the jewels?
The rubies of Catherine the Great, the Heart of Fire.
I know nothing of any jewels. I want only that Derek Kettering should be brought to justice for killing his wife.
Tell me, what do you know about a man called the Marquis?
The Marquis? Hmm. He works behind the scenes and lets others do the dirty work for him. He does not come from the criminal class.
A Frenchman?
We believe so, but we are not sure. He has worked in France, England, and America. By all accounts, he is a grand seigneur, speaking French and English with equal perfection. What do you know of him?
Oh, at the moment, very little, but I have sent a cable to Scotland Yard, and there may be news waiting for me at my hotel.
But if the Marquis is involved, surely it upsets all our ideas?
It does not upset mine. On the contrary, I think it agrees with them very well. Now, I think I must go and have a word with this Gray. If I have news of any importance, I will let you know at once.
Catherine is still dressing, I'm afraid, Monsieur Poirot.
Ah.
Can I give her a message, or would you rather wait till she comes down?
No, I do not think it is necessary that I should wait to see Mademoiselle Catherine. I think perhaps it is better that I should not.
What's happened?
Perhaps you could tell her that Derek Kettering was arrested tonight for the murder of his wife.
You want me to tell Catherine that?
If you please, mademoiselle.
Do you believe he did it?
The police say so.
And you?
I was seen by two people going into and leaving his wife's compartment just before the train got into Lille.
But does anyone know exactly when she died?
We know this much, that a few moments after the train left Lyon, Madame Kettering was dead.
How do you know that?
Someone else went into her compartment and found her dead.
You think someone on the train must have killed her? That need not be so at all. What is to stop anyone swinging themselves onto the train when it stopped at Lyon? They could go straight to the compartment, strangle her, take the rubies, and drop off the train without anyone being the wiser. She may actually have been killed while the train was in Lyon station. Then she would have been alive when Derek went in, and dead when the other person found her.
Oh, mademoiselle, what you have said is very just, very true. I was struggling in the darkness and you have thrown me a light. It may be that this very night I shall learn something more. At least, I am going to try.
You are meeting someone.
I am like a squirrel, mademoiselle. I have stored away the little fact here, the little fact there. I go now to my store and I take out one particular nut that I stole away, let me see, 17 years ago. Au revoir, mademoiselle.
Have I helped?
Oh, yes, mademoiselle, you have helped. If things get very dark, always remember that.
Fortune
smiles on you tonight.
It would be well if I stopped now.
Ah, you are the daughter of your father, Mademoiselle Zia. To know when to stop, that is the art.
Thank you for a wonderful evening, Monsieur Poirot. But it is time you went home. Where is my father?
Well, just at the moment, he seems to be engaged in a very interesting conversation, which I would not wish to disturb, but which I wish I could overhear. Do you know the lady who was with him?
Who is she? She's very striking.
You do not know? Well, that is Mirel, the famous dancer. But while your father is so preoccupied, I must talk to you. I will fetch your cloak for you, and we will go out into the gardens.
This is where the suicides take place.
So it is said. Men are foolish, are they not, mademoiselle? L'amour causes many fatalities, is it not? Oh, you should not laugh at love, mademoiselle, you who are young and beautiful. Oh,
hardly that. You forget I am 33, Monsieur Poirot. As you told my father, it is 17 years since you aided us in Paris that time.
Well, it was a curious affair, that, altogether. Your father never knew the details, I think, and I never told him.
I don't understand what you are talking about.
Oh, do you not, mademoiselle? Have you forgotten Antonio Barezio? An assistant can lift his eyes to his master's daughter, can he not, if he is young and handsome with a glib tongue? But since they cannot make love all the time, they may occasionally talk of things that interest them both, such as that very interesting item of jewelry that was temporarily in your father's possession. Perhaps he was even shown where it was kept. And afterwards, when it was gone, then there comes along that excellent fellow, Hercule Poirot. The priceless heirlooms are restored, and there are no awkward questions.
You have known all this time. Who told you?
Oh, no one told me. I guessed. It was a good guess, was it not, mademoiselle?
You want something from me, is that it?
I want your help, mademoiselle.
What is it you want to know?
I want to know more about the Marquis.
Very well. I will tell you what I know. You were quite right when you guessed that we were in Nice because of the rubies. Yeah. They have been handed over here according to plan.
And have you seen the Marquis, mademoiselle?
Once, but not very well. It was through a keyhole.
That always presents difficulties. But all the same, you saw him. Now, would you know him again?
He wore a mask.
Ah. Young or old?
He had white hair, but I do not think he was old. It may have been a wig. His walk was young, and so was his voice.
Oh, this is most interesting.
But it is not that that I meant to tell you. It was one other little fact that I thought might be, well, of interest to you.
Yes?
The rubies, as I say, were handed over to my father here at Nice. I did not see the person who handed them over, but...
Yes?
I know one thing. It was a woman.
Catherine, what on earth's the matter? You look so pale.
I've had a letter from a friend of mine in St. Mary Mead. An old lady called Miss Viner. I used to go round and talk to her nearly every day. She's just been told she has cancer. She may have a year, perhaps a little longer.
And you're going to go back?
I don't know. But you have news for me. Everyone seems to be leaving.
Monsieur Poirot phoned to say that Mr. Van Alden and Major Knighton are going back.
Ah.
Are you really going to desert us too?
I have had my little adventure. Now I just want to go back to a life that is ordinary and uneventful, where I can just be of use to people and listen to their troubles. There's nothing more for me here. Cher Mademoiselle Catherine, I trust that you are in good health and that the return to the English winter has not proved too depressing. I am prosecuting my inquiries with the utmost diligence. Do not think that I am taking a holiday here at the Ritz. Very shortly I shall be in England. Perhaps you can come up to London and we can have lunch together at the Savoy, which is where your adventure started. You remember that we are colleagues in this affair. Be assured, mademoiselle, of my most respectful and devoted sentiments. Hercule Poirot.
You have changed, mademoiselle.
Oh, in what way?
Well, these nuances are hard to express. Well, I didn't mean you had crow's feet round the eyes.
I am older.
Yes, yes, you are older. And when I first saw you, mademoiselle, you were a looker-on at life.
And now?
And now you no longer look on. You have the wary look of a fighter who is playing a difficult game. Have you seen anything of our Riviera friends since you've been back, mademoiselle?
I have seen something of Major Knighton. Hmm? He's been down to St. Mary Mead a couple of times.
Oh, is that so? And Monsieur Van Alden remains in London?
Yes, he is here at the Savoy.
Ah, I must call in on him.
You have news for him?
What makes you think that?
I wondered, what were you doing in Paris?
I went there to make a call at the Russian embassy.
Oh.
I see that tells you nothing. I have a friend who once described me as a human oyster. Now, as you know, I am not satisfied with the facts against Derek Kettering. Mm-hmm. The facts led straight to him, but there is one thing which has been left out of the account.
And what is that?
The disfigured face of the victim. I've asked myself 100 times, was Derek Kettering the kind of man who would deal those smashing blows after having committed the murder? What end would it serve? To return to your question, I went to the Russian embassy to see a particular personage who I suspect of being the active party in the sale of the jewels to Monsieur Van Alden. I threatened him.
With the police?
No, not with the police, but with the press. A much more deadly weapon. And in the end, I get the whole story out of him, and I learn of where the jewels were handed over, and I learn, too, of the man who paced up and down in the street outside, a man with a venerable head of white hair, who walks with the light step of a young man, the man I believe to be the Marquis.
And now you have come to London to see Mr. Van Alden.
Well, not entirely for that reason. I had other work to do. I went to see a theatrical agent.
Are you thinking of going on the stage, Monsieur Poirot?
Oh, the world lost a great actor when Hercule Poirot joined the police. No. I wanted information about a male impersonator named Kitty Kidd. Ah, huh? Oh, but I am being an oyster again. I will tell you one thing. There has been a doubt all along in my mind as to whether the robbery and the murder were done by the same person.
And now?
And now I know.
I am not clever like you, Monsieur Poirot. Half the things you've been telling me don't seem to point anywhere at all. The idea that came to me came from such an entirely different angle.
Ah, but that is always so. A mirror tells the truth, but everyone stands in a different place for looking into the mirror.
Then tell me, does this help at all? It's a newspaper cutting about a jewel robbery at Lady Tamplin's villa years ago. I found it at Miss Viner's.
Oh, yes, it does help. As I told you, mademoiselle, one stands at a different angle, but it is always the same things which are reflected there.
It mustn't be much longer, Monsieur Poirot. I can't go on much longer.
Oh, courage, mademoiselle. You must not fail now. The end is very near.
I didn't expect to see you again so soon, Monsieur Poirot. I don't mind telling you, I've had just about as much as I can stand. The newspapers have been going at it hammer and tongs ever since my son-in-law's arrest.
You must not be alarmed at what I am about to say. Supposing, Monsieur Van Alden, that after all, Derek Kettering did not murder his wife.
Are you mad?
No, I am not mad. I am eccentric, perhaps, but not where my profession is concerned.
But I thought the case was closed.
There is an off chance, Major Knighton, that it might be the Comte de la Roche, after all. At least I have succeeded in upsetting his alibi.
How did you manage that?
His servants were known to me. They had not always behaved exactly in accordance with the law. I managed to bully them into telling me the truth. The Comte did not return to his villa until the day after the murder.
Oh.
He could perfectly well have been on the train.
But the rubies he had in his possession were fake.
And clearly he would not have committed the murder except for the rubies. But you are overlooking one point. Where the rubies are concerned, someone might have been there before him.
Who could possibly?
Well, the thing is not proved, but the facts are worth investigating. You must come out with me to the south of France to investigate the case on the spot.
You are very busy at present, Mr. Van Alden.
Oh, I guess this business comes first. All right, Mr. Poirot, let's waste no time. We'll go tomorrow. What train?
We will go, I think, by the blue train.
If you ask me, Knighton, Poirot's lost his grip. This whole trip has been one mad charade. All that business of acting out the whole affair at the Gare de Lyon with Poirot playing all the parts. First Catherine, then Ruth, then the maid, then the man in the compartment.
It was very tedious, but then Poirot likes to show off.
Yeah, yeah. And then he drags us off the train to the ticket barrier. What was that in aid of?
I can't imagine. He seems to have taken leave of his senses.
He must have known we'd left our tickets on the train with the conductor and wouldn't be able to get through.
It was just as well the train was late leaving, or we'd never have got back on it. Sir, I think we should return on the first possible train. This is a wild goose chase.
Yes, and why the hell do we have to sit up all night in my compartment? What, it just beats me. Why won't he let the conductor make up the beds? Yes?
12.
I think that I'd best check that your compartment door is bolted, Major Knight.
It's very good of you, Poirot, but I told you I knew I had bolted it.
Yes, I know. I go fussy in my old age.
Yes. It's a damnably uncomfortable journey. I suppose you know what you're playing.
I know exactly what I am playing at, Major Knight.
We are drawing into Lyon, Monsieur Van Alden.
And it must have been about this time that my poor Ruth was killed. If your theory is correct, Poirot, it was here that the man left the train?
No. No man left the train, but I rather think a woman may have done so.
What?
A woman?
Yes. Yes, a woman. You may not remember, Monsieur Van Alden, but Miss Gray mentioned that a youth in a cap and overcoat descended to the platform ostensibly to stretch his legs. I think that youth was probably a woman.
But who was she?
Her name, or the name under which she was known for many years, is Kitty Kidd. But you, Monsieur Van Alden, you were by another name, that of Ada Mason.
What are you talking about, Poirot?
I think you know very well. Before I forget it, permit me to offer you a cigarette, Major Knighton. Out of your own cigarette case.
I beg your pardon.
It was careless of you to drop it when you boarded the train on the route round Paris. Oh, you do not wish a cigarette?
You're mad.
No.
I simply
don't
have to
live out in this rubbish. The door into the next compartment is open and you are being covered from there. I unbolted the door into the corridor and our friends the police have installed themselves there.
Oh, dear.
As I expect you know. The French police want you rather urgently, Major Knighton, or should I say, Monsieur le Marquis?
Frankly, I'm a puzzled man, Monsieur Poirot. Hmm? Relieved, but puzzled. When did you first begin to suspect the maid?
Not for some time, but one peculiar little point drew my attention to her. She told us the cigarette case was one which Madame Kettering had recently given to her husband. Hmm. But she had been with her mistress for only 2 months, and Madame Kettering would certainly have been in no mood to give her husband a present at that time. I thought that was suspicious. But she could have had nothing to do with the crime, since she had been left behind in Paris. And Madame Kettering had been seen alive since then. But then, I say to myself, how do we know that Ada Mason was left behind in Paris?
Knighton?
Yeah?
He said he saw her in the Ritz on the day after the train left Paris.
Exactly. And then it struck me that he, too, had been in your service for 2 months. A curious coincidence. And his name began with a K. Could it have been his cigarette case? If Ada Mason and he were working together, would she not act precisely as she had done and use it to incriminate Derek Kettering?
But what I don't understand is, who was the man in Ruth's compartment in Paris? Derek Kettering or the Comte de la Roche?
Oh, that is the simplicity of the whole thing. There was no man. Whose word do we have for it that ever was a man there? Ada Mason's. And we believe her story because of Knighton's evidence that she was left behind in Paris.
But Ruth herself told the conductor that she had left her maid behind her.
No. Your daughter was dead before the train arrived at the Gare de Lyon. It was Ada Mason, dressed in her mistress' very distinctive clothing, who purchased the dinner basket and made that statement to the conductor.
Impossible.
No, not at all. But there was a very real danger that when the conductor came to discover the body, he might realize that it was not the woman he had talked to the night before. And that was the reason for the disfigured face of your daughter.
But who killed Ruth, then, and when?
Well, bear in mind that it was planned by Knighton and Ada Mason working together. Knighton was in Paris that day on your business. He boarded the train somewhere on the route around Paris. Madame Kettering would be surprised, but quite unsuspicious. Perhaps he draws her attention to something out of the window and slips the cord around her neck. Whole thing is over in a second or two. Knighton drops off the train, taking the jewel case containing the rubies with him. And there, the Gare de Lyon, Ada Mason does her performance.
They didn't leave anything to chance, did they? Go on.
Well, before getting to Lyon, Ada Mason arranged her mistress' body in the bank and herself changed into man's clothing and prepared to leave the train. When Derek Kettering entered his wife's compartment, he thought she was sleeping peacefully. Now, as soon as the train reached Lyon, Ada Mason got off and took the first train back to Paris and the Ritz Hotel. Knighton brought the jewelers back with him to Nice when he came down with you, and Mason handed them over to the Greek. Altogether a neatly planned coup.
And Richard Knighton is, in fact, the well-known criminal, Le Marquis.
One of his chief assets was his plausible, ingratiating manner. He was well-born, well-connected in honorable service in the war, and seemed altogether above suspicion. But there was one thing that puzzled me. Knighton has a decided limp. Now, the Marquis decidedly did not limp. That was a stumbling block. But Lennox Temple mentioned one day that according to the surgeon who treated Knighton in her mother's war hospital, he should not have had a limp. And that suggested camouflage. And then Miss Gray gave me a cutting, showing that there had been a jewel robbery at Lady Templing's hospital at the time that Knighton had been there. She realized that she was on the same tack as myself when I wrote to her from the Ritz in Paris.
Well, what did you find at the Ritz?
That Ada Mason arrived there on the morning after the crime, and not the evening of the day before.
Good God. Well, I guess you know what this means to me, Monsieur Poirot. I'll be sending you around a check in the morning.
Oh.
But no check in the world will express what I feel about what you've done for me. You are the goods, Monsieur Poirot. Every time, you are the goods.
Oh, I am only Hercule Poirot. Yet, as you say, in my own way, I am a big man, even as you. Also a big man. I am glad and happy to have been of service to you. Now, I go to repair the damages caused by travel. Alas, my excellent valet Georges is not with me. Bonjour, Monsieur Papopoulos.
Monsieur Poirot, I thought you had left me.
Our business compelled me to return, my dear Monsieur Papopoulos.
Business?
Yes, business. And, talking of business, you have not completely ruined the Greek ex-minister, I hope. I understand you sold him a very wonderful ruby, which, strictly entre nous, is being worn by Mademoiselle Mirel, the dancer.
Yes, that is so.
A ruby not unlike the fabulous Heart of Fire.
It has its points of resemblance, certainly.
You have a wonderful hand with jewels, Monsieur Papopoulos. I congratulate you.
And would it be indiscreet if one asked what your business was?
No, not at all, not at all. I've just succeeded in laying the Marquis by the heels.
The Marquis? Now, why does that sound familiar to me? No, I cannot recall it.
No, you would not, I'm sure. He's just been arrested for the murder of the English lady, Madame Kettering.
And what has happened to Derek?
He was released yesterday.
Where is he now?
He left Nice last night.
For St. Mary Mead, where Catherine's staying.
Yes, for St. Mary Mead.
Oh, I was a fool. I thought she really cared for Knighton. I ought to have known better. I thought that if she had fallen for Knighton, then Derek...
Courage, mademoiselle.
Oh, well, it would not have done. But I did help, Monsieur Poirot. Hmm? At any rate, I did help.
Oh, yes, mademoiselle, it was you who gave me the first inkling of the truth when you said the person who committed the crime need not have been on the train at all. Before that, I could not see how the thing could have been done.
I'm glad. Hmm. At any rate, that's something. That's the damned blue train.
Yes. Life is like a train, mademoiselle. It goes on, and it is a good thing that this is so.
Why?
Because the train gets to its journey's end at last. And there is a proverb about that in your language, yes?
Journey's end in lovers' meeting. And that's not going to be true for me.
Oh, trust the train, mademoiselle, for it is le bon Dieu who drives it. Trust the train, mademoiselle, and trust Hercule Poirot. He knows.
That was The Mystery of the Blue Train by Agatha Christie, with Maurice Denham as Hercule Poirot, Janet Moore as Catherine Gray, and Robert Beattie as Rufus Van Alden.